get to make choices and decisions and then live with the consequences of those decisions. So it has already built into it some elements, some of the beginnings of the possibility to look at the moral consequences of those decisions, not just the strategic consequences, but that decisions are the basic foundation of what we often think of as morality, values. And the second part of what's so exciting about computer games is that they are amazing ways to capture systems. If you think about all preceding media before that, they generally have been ways to capture narratives, a storyline, a single storyline. You can always have imaginations within that storyline, but basically you get one storyline. And what games provide is an opportunity to instead see an entire system. You can poke at part of the system, whether it's a physics system that allows you to shoot bullets, or whether it's an economic system that allows you to build a city, like in SimCity. You can kind of play around with the system and see how does it respond, how does it react. And what's especially interesting right now is that you can actually maybe merge the two, that we can begin to see where are the values and morals within a system. And it's especially important at this moment in time, because at this moment in time, so much of the world is becoming absorbed into systems. Systems are becoming so important to us. When you think about global climate change, when you think about the healthcare system, when you think about a lot of things that affect our daily lives, increasingly those are systems. And yet, I won't go into the psychology of this, we're not necessarily hardwired to think about these as moral issues. So what can we do in terms of this new capacity, this new medium to connect systems and values? So we're going to go from that high-level theory right down to something really specific, which is a pending project, hopefully pending project at WGBH, and which you will have the opportunity to provide some input into today. And I will turn it over to Blythe to describe that project.
Thank you, Jane. So if any of you came here thinking you were going to get an exploration of moral choice in Grand Theft Auto 4, I apologize, because that's not what this is at all. WGBH is in development for a new project to teach children about environmental sustainability. And the connection there to the issue of choice of morality is that at its core, environmental sustainability really does involve values and how you assign values to things. What do you value? Emotional value, economic value, weighing the costs and benefits of different choices that you make. And that's where Jane saw a real opportunity for our program, which is in development, and the associated game to be a way to explore the issues that the group is interested in. Where we are in the process, I'll quickly tell you, is that we've completed our research. We have a draft of our curriculum, and we are in the early phases of the creative, of developing our creative. We have a kernel of the creative idea, which we'll share with you here. But for the most part, but because we're so early, when you go to do your little, to workshop the game, you will be fairly unrestrained. There are no constraints upon what you can do, and we are not resistant to any ideas you might have, because that's how early we are in our development process. So may that be an inspiration to you. For those of you who don't know GBH or well, a quick background: we produce a huge percentage of the programming for PBS, both the primetime programming for adults and also for children. Children's programming began in 72 with Zoom, and has also included Degrassi Junior High and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And all those shows that are currently airing right now on PBS are listed there. We have the PBS series. We have interactive websites, which are typically hosted on pbs.org. We have outreach initiatives associated with our programs. So the reach is pretty broad, and is always both entertaining and, of course, educational. So now, the goal of our project, when we set out to design to develop a program on environmental sustainability, we knew we did not want it to be about the top 10 things, the top 50 things that kids could do today. We knew we wanted it to go deeper than that. And this was predicated upon a few things, which we learned by talking with researchers and experts. Number one, the issues that we face today will not be the issues that our kids face tomorrow in the future when they are adults. The issues will be completely different. So how do we prepare kids for that? And secondly, sustainability thinking and environmental mindfulness is really not about what to think. It's about how to think, how to see and appreciate the interconnectedness of systems, how to be curious, how to be empathetic, how to think in a collaborative fashion with others, and how to weigh costs and benefits, how to appreciate that for every action, there's a consequence. So if children are going to be environmentally mindful and understand how to think about environmental sustainability in general, they're going to have those habits of mind. They're going to have to see that the world is real, that the world is really made up of an interconnected web of systems. So the goal of our project is, and it's a transmedia project, which I'll quickly show you, is to teach the science concepts of systems, natural and man-made, and the pathways to environmental sustainability. And I will skip through the broad impact. Our broad range target audience is children ages 6 to 11, but we're really going to focus on 10 to 11-year-olds, which is 4th and 5th grade. So keep that in mind when you're doing your little work project. Our vision is that this is going to be a transmedia project. At its core will be the PBS television series, which will consist, hopefully in season one, of 30 episodes. There will be an outreach component as well. If we have our way, we'll have we're thinking big, an augmented reality game. There will be an online game hosted on this program's website. There will be a robust website that includes everything from character backgrounds, additional material so people can dig much deeper. Think Heroes or Lost. We have, again, big plans. There may be a mobile platform component and hopefully also a commercial game. So very quickly, as I said, we're early in our narrative, but the premise, because this is a transmedia project, as with all transmedia projects, the creative concept will inform and infuse all platforms and all the media on all the platforms. And at its core, we'll be following the adventures and decision-making of a bunch of kids, major and minor characters. It could expand anywhere from 4 kids at the beginning to 50 characters over the course of the season, from around the world who become trapped in an inventive, multi-leveled video game. Something very big is at stake, and they have to play the game through to get to the end. The stakes are very high. And not only to get to the end involves saving the world, saving something, and ultimately to get out of the game themselves. The characters themselves have different levels of video game expertise. Some of the kids trapped in the game are newbies. Some of them are very experienced. We're going to be playing with all the different personalities. What's the guy who defined the different personalities of gamers? Yeah, all those different types of gamers. There'll be the explorer, the achiever, the wrecker, the havoc wrecker. We'll have all of that. The core story will build from show to show, and there will be some, cliffhanger at the end, which keeps them coming back for season 2. Humor and comedy is a big piece of this, as well as drama. We are very attached to the video game concept at the core of our creative for a number of reasons. One, kids love video games. 2, it appeals to their love of exploring virtual worlds, poking around, discovering new things. It turns digital media into a tool for exploring the natural world. Digital media is often demonized for getting kids away from nature, and while that is something we have to be very mindful of, because it is one of our goals for the program to connect kids to nature, we are looking to flip, to co-opt this medium and turn it to our advantage. And because video games and how they function allow us to actually explore sustainability very explicitly in terms of being able to zoom in and out, scale forwards and backwards in time, play out action, cause and effect, consequences, and really have kids play with the concept of systems and rules, which, as Jean said, is exactly what games are all about. So the game that we're going to be workshopping today is not the game that's in the television show, but the online game or the commercial game that it spins off or is related to it. And the goal of that game is to help kids understand the web of systems, natural and man-made, how they function, ideally, a deeper awareness of these real world systems that are at work and at play all around them every single day, so that we would hope that when they come away from the television show, when they come out of playing the game, they are actually looking at things a little differently. In addition to having a deeper understanding of how things work, that they would actually look at things differently because now they see something that they didn't see before. And I just love this quote by James Gee that I had to include, which I will read, but perhaps, video games, under the right circumstances, may well be able to encourage and actually help players to enact an attitude or stance similar to the one taken by scientists studying complex systems. This stance involves a sort of embodied empathy for a complex system wherein a person seeks to enter imaginatively into a system all the while seeing and thinking of it as a system. And that is very much what we are looking to do and teach with our television show and the game and everything else associated with it. Okay, so that's really the overview of, off you go. Please help us figure out how we can go off the ecology of games to teach the ecology of systems and how they relate to environmental sustainability to children ages 10 to 11. And then I can cut to the curriculum, or do you want to? What do you want to frame for us? How we?
Quickly, yeah. So what we're going to do in response to this question, and you're going to provide an even more specific challenge, is you can, if you look around the room, there are different topics, different ways to kind of get at this question, we will, as soon as Blythe explains the specific curriculum objectives, break up into different groups, whatever groups you're in. So this is the unconference within the unconference. Break up into the topics that you're actually interested in talking about. And I will explain that after Blythe explains the curriculum goals. But you'll basically split up into those groups, help address that challenge in response to the curricular goals, and then what we'll do is reconvene as a group and you'll have the chance to present your responses to that challenge. So.
Okay, so the curriculum for the entire project has the goal is to show kids how to think more deeply and creatively about the world they live in and to make choices based on what they discover. And our objectives, we will achieve this through three curricular objectives. And this is what, if you could please have these objectives in mind as you're doing your little piece. We want to develop in them an understanding of systems and how that relates and how they relate to environmental sustainability. The modeling and encouraging positive attitudes and scientific inquiry skills. So curiosity, empathy, those are positive attitudes. Scientific inquiry skills is anything from observation, comparison, data collection, analysis, hypothesis. And then also to connect children to nature. And this is a big piece for us. We are looking to connect children to nature. As Richard Louv would tell you, anyone who's read Last Child in the Woods or knows of it, there's something called nature deficit disorder, which is that in this increased age of stranger anxiety and television, increase in television viewing and video gaming and internet, children are more and more removed from nature, and it's hard to care about something that you have no connection with. So environmental sustainability does assume a level of empathy that we as individuals have with nature. We are a television show that has a video game in it. So that's we're already very mediated, so we're looking to really figure out how to translate what we're teaching into reality and get kids outside. GBH always does have this goal of getting kids to watch, then turn off the TV and go do something. So this is turn off the TV and go outside, or turn off the TV and go think about something as it relates to helping the earth. And okay, so now this is something to get you thinking. We had to choose for the purpose of this exercise a unit of a real curriculum. This is a curriculum unit as it's taught in fifth grade. Water obviously is a big topic. The big idea is helping kids understand that human activities can generate pollutants which have a significant impact on water quality and can disturb an ecosystem. And an example would be fertilizer. Fertilizer obviously matters. We wouldn't be able to feed the people that we feed in the world today in the absence of fertilizer. But there are, so those are the benefits, but there are also very most definitely costs to fertilizer. Too much fertilizer runs off. When there's too much fertilizer, it runs off into the watershed, which creates algae blooms, which suffocates everything else that needs oxygen in the water, and you lead to, it's, you know, fish die, other plants, you upset the ecosystem of the waterways. Over-fertilization also hurts things in the earth. It leads to burnout of other vegetation. So this is just a very concrete scientific example. Feel free to manipulate it. Play with the idea of fertilizer. Play with the idea. You can make this abstract or as concrete as you want, but this is a concept that really would be taught in fifth grade, that fifth graders do need to understand. It is a cause and effect. It does show the connection of things. And so this is an example that you can play with. Or if you have anything else that you'd rather look at that fits the theme, feel free.
Great. And we've been very lucky to have a group of folks with us today to help facilitate these conversations. There's been a group of us who've been meeting about monthly to have conversations about what the intersection of games and these moral values, how that might work. Let's just kind of go around the room and point to the folks who will be helping to facilitate this conversation. Doesn't mean they're going to be running the conversation. They'll just be there and have a lot of expertise around games and thinking about game design, starting from Eitan.
Hi, I'm Eitan. I'll be doing business models.
Great.
Sam. Hi, I'm Sam. I'll be doing transmedia.
What does transmedia mean?
So that's going to be really examining how games developed in concert with the TV program could make use of the TV show or other media forms that Blythe mentioned in helping to educate people on this.
Eitan, say more about what you mean by business.
Oh, so obviously this is going to cost a lot of money to create and to produce, and especially if you're going to go and make a TV show and a separate video game, there needs to be, you know, if there can be some sort of sustainability model or maybe even a profit model, then they can keep running with this, making more episodes and getting out more material. So.
Yaroslav?
Yeah, I'm Yaroslav, and in this group, we're going to talk about motivation. So we're going to look at how do we attract people to play our game and how do we get them to care about our game.
Doris.
Yeah, I'm Doris. I will have the effect topic, and I was told that this is mainly concerned with the actual game design. So the sample would be the starting point.
Right, so the question is how will this game lead people to care?
Yeah.
More than just understand, but also care.
Josh Diaz, and we're going to cover equal participation. How do we get as broad an audience as possible for this, and how do we make sure that we're considering a bunch of different perspectives within the game and within the systems we're talking about?
So across gender, across class, people who may or may not even have computers.
Race.
Yep. Peter?
I'm Peter Rausch. I'm still working out which ethnicity group or not.
Okay, great. Matthew?
I'm Matthew Weiss. If it actually works out this way, I'll be doing the media evaluation group, which is going to be concerned with whether or not the knowledge transfer that this project hopes for is actually taking place.
Right. Or even also the AFEC transfer, too, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. And Marla.
I'm Marlene Orton. I'll be dealing with engagement, which is a very overloaded word, but in this particular case, what we're thinking about is, so our subject, our content has a lot to do with the outdoors, and yet the media we're dealing with, you know, video games and television are traditionally very indoor media. So how do we merge the indoor with the outdoor in some sort of elegant way?
Yeah, engagement's the wrong word, but I could think of it. So, thanks. Gary, were you going to do one?
I will take any other topic that people want to talk about that aren't on the boards currently. So I'll talk about
right.
As well.
Potpourri.
Yeah.
All right.
Potpourri.
Potpourri. Is that you too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So the instructions are you've got half an hour. And so basically it's a collision of one of these topics, these challenges, and the challenge of the water supply / pollution, fertilizer or salt, you know, runoff, and then find, you know, brainstorm some set of either designs or solutions to this kind of grid of challenges, and then we're going to come back at the end of the half hour and then talk about what we've come up with. So any before we break up, any questions about what we're doing?
Okay. I'm struggling with scope and scale for budget or some, you know, the game that you defined as the water game is a relatively small.
Yeah, this is just a piece of the game. This is just to design a piece.
It could be a level or
a level or an activity within the larger game.
It could be a casual game. It could be, you know, you can embed it in a virtual, you know, ongoing virtual world game. It could be, you know, a quest within a virtual world. It could be, right? I mean, in other words, you might find it helpful within your group to kind of make up your own context. Or
yeah.
You might just want to kind of say, well, if it was a casual game, we'd do this. And if it was a embedded, you know, virtual world, we would do that. Well, in other words, we're giving you as much freedom as possible to choose whatever you think is the best vehicle for answering this.
As opposed to saying, go design a game about ecosystems, which seemed a little huge. This was, but you can go as broad as you want.
I do have one. So for the evaluation piece, it seems important. I mean, the context seems important. This is something that it's educational. It's designed to be educational, but it's also... It's not a classroom context.
No, this is informal education, so it's not designed to be facilitated by a teacher.
So to some extent, the evaluation challenge might be what's built into the game so you can evaluate the learning that's happening without having to go to somebody outside of the game to say, test these.
Well,
kids,
that having
right?
been said, WGBH does always evaluate its projects, so there will be an evaluation component that we do watching kids play, even though it's not in a classroom. Or, and it may be in a classroom setting that we do the evaluation, but that's not.
Okay, because I'm just thinking about, like, I mean, the teachers, parents, the parents, like, the kids are just logging on to the game at home, you know. But, I mean, I suppose these are all things we could just talk about.
Yeah, make up your answers, because the answer is we don't know. It's still very, right? So, seriously, any other questions about, also, any questions about the process, too? Great. Oh, yes.
I think it's similar to the last question. It's almost like, how do you know you succeeded? What will they know at the end that they didn't know before? But if you could actually turn it round, where would you know it failed?
Hmm. Oh, yes, that's a great question too. Absolutely.
What does a fail kid look like?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it also.
Thank you. All right, so let's break up, and then we'll answer questions within the small groups. So find a topic you're interested in. And if you're not interested in these topics, then maybe propose something else. All right. You can stay where you are, but what we're going to do is I'm gonna pass this mic around the room to each group. And what I'd ask for each group, for the other group to do is listen to the presentation and then have a couple of comments and suggestions and feedback. Again, the idea overall is we're trying to generate a lot of ideas, a lot of solutions to some of the really tough challenges we've been bringing up in this session. And you probably came up with more problems than you did with solutions, but that's fine too. Okay, great. So just tell us a little bit about what the problem you decided to, I mean, you probably just narrowed it a little bit, but what the problem is you were solving and
Hi, so we were doing the misnamed engagement category. So we were thinking about, what we were really thinking about is, this sort of, having kids make this connection to nature and understanding systems and actually going out into the world and actually having some of those experiences and yet still have that somehow be a game with this TV and video game component. One of the things we talked about at first was what kind of technology we thought was appropriate. Because there's lots of technology out there that we could imagine using. You could use Nintendo DSs, you could use GPS, you could use, you could pretend in 5 years, you know, there's all this really amazing mapping technology and, you know, everywhere you go there's a Wi-Fi. But we also wanted, we acquired Josh from the equal participation topic, so we decided that we actually wanted to get a very broad population, so we restricted our technology to assuming that our players had computers, which would be online, and that they had cell phones with cameras. That seemed like a fairly reasonable thing to assume in about 3 years. So we thought about a couple of different kinds of, so if we actually sent, so the model we were sort of using was there was a game and somehow that, sort of sent kids out to do something in particular. The sort of wackiest idea we came up with was this idea of, okay, so we really liked community sorts of events. So there was something you did yourself that had some sort of aggregate effect. So for example, one of the things you might be asked to do is to grow a plant. And then you document the fact that you're growing this plant by taking pictures of it, and somehow this goes onto an online profile. And you can, you can look at the plants other people are growing, and they can look at the plants you're growing. And that there's, somehow this turns into some sort of virtual forest. You've planted a plant in the real world, and you've now planted a plant in the game as well, which you can go around and look at. And this came, actually bought into our most, I believe it was called the most radical idea, which was there was some sort of challenge that you were trying to do as an entire group. All the players were trying to achieve together. So it's, you were just planting your one plant, but once the forest reached a certain size, something good happened. And the thing we thought might be the something good is that you get your new episode of your television show. you have this TV show which is going on, and every episode ends in some sort of challenge, and you don't actually get any more new episodes until you have actually met this challenge. Because that seemed to have a really immediate real-world effect on what you were doing. I planted my tree, I did my part, and now I actually get to see new parts of the show. Some other things we were thinking about, we also had a little bit of brainstorming on specific challenges that we might ask kids, players to do. One of the ones we really liked was looking up the clouds, somehow taking pictures of clouds and saying what they looked like, and then, commenting on other people's clouds and what they look like to you. There was sort of an adopt a tree idea. What's in your fridge? Where does it come from? What's actually in there? How processed is it? Is it, something that actually grows from a tree? How far away did it come to get there? What was the impact on the environment from actually getting it from where it grows to where you are? Going along with that is what's in your school lunch. We were thinking a little bit about organized events and community gardens, but we didn't get terribly far with that. We liked a little bit about coming up with community maps too. For example, where does your water come from in your community? And figuring out where all of your parks were. So you put in the parks in your community, and then other people are also in your community are putting in the parks they know about. And so among all of you, you come up with this map about where these green spaces are. And that's basically what I have.
Wow.
Thank you.
That's great. Any thoughts, feedback? New ideas?
Just one bit, when you were talking through the, how do you get people going out doing, just one thing to look up might be a set of games that are out there now called geocaching, where people actually go out and have actual, little, kind of 1 foot square caches that they put all over, and there's a whole online community that uses these things where, people are getting away from their computers and going out and trying to.
It's the trick of doing something low tech and that we won't get in trouble for telling 11-year-olds to do.
the 11-year-old came in, Mommy, you have to drive me to the place, to the bench,
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
We have thought about that.
Yeah.
It's a very relevant device.
All right. Round of applause. Thank you very much.
Hello. So we were the evaluation group, and we didn't really have we don't sort of have a single overarching conclusion. Although we have one thing that we felt was fairly important at the end, but we started out talking about unanticipated player behavior. So there's you're designing the game because you want to have certain behaviors that players are going to engage in based on a certain set of rules. But anybody who plays games and anybody who watches people play games know that players find all sorts of weird, unexpected things to do in the game. And there was a debate going on, which I don't think we ever reached a concrete conclusion about, as to whether or not this is something you can try to account for in a quantitative way. And I don't actually have anything written down here as to what, I think we just kind of skipped off of that, but.
I think we want to emphasize that there's certain quantitative measures in activity design, but that you need to have qualitative ways of talking and observing kids playing, figure out these unanticipated ways.
We also talked about sort of cheap versus expensive ways of looking at player behavior. So obviously stuff on the back end, like how long do they spend playing the game and all this stuff that you can account for. You can have systems in the game that just monitor this stuff. So stuff on the back end, this just watching how kids play the game in the system was easy. That's cheap stuff to measure. You know, how long they played, you know, when they stopped, how long their PlayStations were. Stuff like that. The expensive stuff was stuff like playtesting and learning evaluation. But the main thing that we got to eventually was trying to deal with this question of, you know, how do you fit, you know, what exactly are you, what is the kind of behavior that you're trying to figure out, or not necessarily behavior, but what are you trying to figure out that they learned, and what is your yardstick for measuring that? And we talked about the problems of asking kids, you know, what, you know, how did you learn how to save a tree today, or you know, what nice thing did you learn how to do, which we felt was probably not the best way to get the information out of them, but instead trying to focus on systems, understand a understanding of the system of the game. So regardless of how good or bad their behavior was, or regardless of how destructive it was, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, like how do you break this game, you know, what, how do you win this game. And I'll, we talked about having cheat codes in the game specifically so kids could use them, because when you cheat, in order to achieve a certain goal, it demonstrates an understanding of how the system works. It's kind of like, oh, well, I wanted to do this, but I couldn't do it, so I had to use this cheat code in order to do it. It's kind of like, oh, that's great. Why did you have to do that? Well, because without the cheat code, the rules prevented me from doing X, Y, and Z. So really what we hit on was this idea that engaging in the environmentally conscious behavior is actually a, only engaging in that kind of behavior is actually the opposite of probably what we want the kids to be doing. We want the kids to be trying all sorts of different scenarios, maybe even seeing how to kill everything in the game, because if they understand why that happens, they're demonstrating an understanding of the system. And demonstrating a comprehension of the system is really what's important. And so the idea of what we have written down here is, yeah, do players comprehend the system is really the question, not do players engage in sort of environmentally nice behavior. Because that's really not something you can control. You can't make the kids into environmentalists. You can only give them a comprehension of the impact of their decisions. And then it's entirely up to them whether or not they make the conscious decisions or not. Sure, sure.
One other idea that we had in the group was something that may go beyond where GBH typically stops with evaluation of programs, but to think about a way to use the data that the game's generating to produce parent-accessible data about what their kids are doing in the game. That could be interesting for showing parents where the, sort of what's the inherent value of letting my kid spend time playing this game.
I have a comment on that. That seems to me to be potentially dangerous, because then you have a server somewhere sitting around with lots of data that you've collected around about 10 and 11-year-old kids, and even if it's innocuous and, you know, just they've been watching the show and they've been doing this, that still seems a little bit potentially scary.
So be concerned about that. That's an important thing to be concerned about, but yeah. I think there's an interesting possibility, too.
Any other feedback?
I really do like the idea of letting the game be open enough for players to actually experiment with the exact opposite intended scenario, where, you know, the complete nightmare scenario, because every kid will do that.
That also helps the, you know, get away from this, oh, the teacher gave this to you, and obviously you're supposed to do some nice thing with it. I mean, if kids are just like, oh yeah, I get to kill stuff, I mean, that's going to be exciting for a certain age.
Yes. In fact, I have blown several hours in Grand Theft Auto actually doing exactly the wrong thing. Firing a gun in the gas station. Spawning the combat helicopter to get the 6-star rating.
And you found out what happens when you did shoot somebody.
Yes.
What did it take to take down the helicopter?
You know now not to point a gun at the gas station and
shoot. You know what, even that is fascinating, because, you know, the new physics of the game, you know, it became a contest between me and my friends to see how high we could make our bodies shoot in the air.
And that, of course, is demonstrating an understanding of how sitting on an exploding gas station when it explodes affects your body.
Yeah. Physics lesson.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hand it over and run out of words and comments. So yeah, we talked about how we could make kids care about what's going on in the environment. And there were different factors we discussed. One of them was there needs to be some sort of emotional hook to draw them into the story. And from that, a discussion followed. Is the emotional hook the entry point, or is the cognitive stimulation the entry point, and then you see the effect that your action had on the environment, and is that something that triggers the realization, okay, that was bad or that was good, and then feeling good or bad about it, and that changes your behavior in the future. We talked about style of the game, to be less photorealistic for kids, to be easier to like accept as real than just telling them this is the real world, if I understood it correctly, I guess. One very important question we discussed was how can we teach them an overall view of how the systems that are discussed in the game or that should be demonstrated in the game, how the systems are connected. And I think this all comes down to the big question, what is the overall game goal of that game? And one thought that I think we addressed at the end is we cannot turn the children into environmentalists, and that shouldn't be the goal, because they should be able to make choices and meaningful choices. So telling them this is good or bad behavior, or this is what you are supposed to do, is probably not the right way to do it. But the goal could be to be either very good or very bad, either very environmentally conscious or unconscious, not unconscious in that sense, but deliberately bad to the environment. And it should be hard to achieve either thing. Like, to be extremely inconsiderate of your environment should be just as hard as being extremely considerate of your environment. And because then the choice you make is important, you have to reflect on what you're really doing, and you have to understand, and understanding what's going on and how these systems work and how they're connected is actually the main part and the main goal of the game, to create some sort of awareness how our world works. And this could be achieved by not having different disconnected levels that illustrate just one little microsystem, but working your way upwards from microsystem to a little bit bigger system to a little bit bigger system, and having a world where all these systems are part of that world, like different levels in that world that are somehow connected. And when you have solved one problem in one world, you get out and you see how the whole world has changed around you, and that informs your future behavior. And also, your actions could be mirrored in some sort of character stats, like the choices you make and the actions you take could be represented by your character allegiance or something. Like, you get different points for what you do, and this is how you assess what you have been doing, and the goal could be either very mean or very good, for example. And I probably forgot something. You want to add something?
I think we were talking about the fact that it should not be a win or lose game, and that there's a number of trade-offs, and you cannot be entirely good. The goal is not to save the fluffy lake, but the goal is to consider the outcomes. So you need fertilizer to produce food, and at the same time you need clear water. So what's the interaction about between these decisions, and how can you make them meaningful?
All right. Thank you.
When you talk about it should be as difficult to do bad things as good things, the Grand Theft Auto example is interesting, because the first party shooter game, it gets boring dying all the time. That's why you carry on with the game, because it's easy to die, and the whole point of the game is to stay alive. Well, it's much easier to damage the environment than to save it. So I think that, and kids know that, so isn't it just unrealistic to do it that way?
That's not what I meant, actually. I think the outcome, in the end, you can do a good thing although you didn't intend to, because systems are complex, and what the message you want to get across is that systems are complex. It's just, it's not that easy. You cannot just shut off that power plant and then you're an environmentalist. You just affect that part of the system. But there are consequences, and they might be good and they might be bad. It's not that easy. And you can do a good thing without thinking, and you can do a bad thing without thinking. But if you want to do deliberately all bad things, you have to reflect on that. And it's not so easy to do everything bad, because it can have consequences, and the consequences are complex. So it's not like living or dying in GTA. Our world is more complex than that, hopefully. And hopefully this is mirrored in the game too.
The thing was also the moral decision requires caring and being involved and being caring about consequences for somebody and also being angry about the situation, but in a way which is a complex decision, not just wanting to bash the bad guy or save the poor little fluffy animal. It has to be a series of decisions in which the combination of anger and caring gets brought into the moral decision making, because moral decisions are not just cognitive. And if you're bringing in affect, then you have to find a way of getting them to care about the situation and not just say, okay, there's a technological fix here, or there's a simple bad solution or a simple good solution.
Can I throw out the opposite, or at least as a question, the opposite view, which is if you're aiming at fourth and fifth graders, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-olds, and the easiest thing to do would be to say, boy, it's really hard being a grown-up, because we've got so many different things. Everything we do makes something better, something worse. Is there a message in here that we can give them at this first time that they're being exposed to a lot of this stuff that doesn't just make them want to jump off a cliff from day one? It gives them a sense, even if it's unrealistic, of optimism, because what we're trying to get at this point is engagement and a sense of agency and potential. They've got plenty of time ahead of them to learn how hard it's going to be, but you know, I feel like you could create every situation and show it to be a sum game, and say, well, some you win, some you lose. You know, you just got to deal with all the ups and downs. If that's a consistent message of a show for 10-year-olds, I don't know how, you know, if you combine that affect with engagement, how long you'll have the engagement.
I think that was something we actually thought about a bit, which was how do you get them to recognize that, you know, the actions that we want them to take, that we're encouraging them to take, matter later. And for me, maybe we didn't make this explicit, but that we're trying to teach a way of seeing, a way of thinking, a way of looking that is very difficult, but that's what gives you that sense of agency. That's what would give you a sense of like power and stability in this. And that is a complicated message to give, but the idea that like starting to think this way is how you deal with this. And I, off the top of my head, I can't think of the resultant action we could say that like this is a start, or this is something you can do that helps. But I also know that there are things out there that are like that. There are things that this is a good solution for this kind of problem. And so saying that we're building up the skill that lets you do that, is that maybe the way to go, or something that's valuable enough? That's the sense of agency, that this is a difficult skill that they're getting.
I would love to continue this, but I'm going to be the process Nazi for a moment and move on to the next group, just because we have a hard deadline.
Really
so.
Short.
Okay, go.
Can I breathe? Daniel?
Yes.
One sentence.
I'd like to maybe follow up to the thoughts where that came from, this direction of making kids doing actually bad things, and this could be combined with giving them an idea of how a system works, for instance through like a double sim city setting, where you're one people and you have to fight against another people in another different country, and you do it through environmental sabotage. And the problem is, so you can destroy everything they have, but the problem is, since you're on the same planet, it eventually could get back to you and destroy your country as well. But this is just one thought. What we've been discussing is more like motivation. What does a 10 or 11 year old motivate to play this game? And we have to say, since we're we all have law degrees, we don't know. So maybe the best solution would be to just rely on what has worked and take an off-the-shelf a game type of game, like, I don't know, jump and run or like simulations like SimCity, and give it just a mental narrative. And well, this won't be enough, of course, to motivate kids to play the game, because there should still be a link between the TV show and the game. And I think here, what certainly won't work is to get the kids to play the game because of the narrative. I think what's crucial here is the characters that appear in the TV show, and since this show is professionally produced, characters can be developed very, very easily, and in a very, in a way that the kids really like them and want to play the game because they know the characters are in the game. And I think this is the characters must be the link between the TV show and the game. By the way, this also can prevent the effect that kids are disappointed by the game, because it's obviously much easier to produce a beautiful and everything video TV show, and I think of the games that are associated with a movie or a TV show or anything can be very disappointing just because of the graphics, for instance, and so there should be a very marked difference between the TV show and the game, even though the subject is the same. Yeah, that's about it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. That's actually a great transition to transmedia.
Yeah. So, Sam?
Yeah, so transmedia. So I guess we kind of start out with two questions, first of which is what various types of media or platforms could be used in a game, and also how could a game relate to this other type of media, namely the TV show. And we pretty quickly decided that mainly for reasons of accessibility, so as to make sure that as many people as possible could play a game, it would be best to stick with a flash-based game online. So not do anything too fancy with cell phones or whatever, but stick to flash. And so with that constraint in mind, we began to think about how a game could relate to a TV show. And there, there's a thought of, you know, both wanting the TV show to encourage people to play the game and to enhance the game, and to have the game encourage people to go back to the TV show, so you can have a real positive feedback loop there. And so kind of thinking about both of those, our thoughts coalesced around the idea of having the game be comprised of mini games, each of which would involve playing with a system, you know, getting to play around with the inputs and outputs so as to either wreak havoc or cause good, depending on, you know, what kids want to do, I suppose. And the idea is every episode would allow, as every episode aired, there would be a parallel mini game that would come out on the website, so that kids could, after seeing an episode, go online, and if, you know, this week's episode was about the water quality thing, then there would be a related mini game that either played with the same topics or allowed them to try their luck at what the characters had to do in the TV show. So that would give them a chance to play as the characters on the TV show and let them think of better solutions that the characters on the show didn't necessarily come up with, or to do different outcomes, so that even if the people on the show want to do good things, they can see what happens if they try to destroy a system. And I guess the other idea, as far as getting feedback between the TV show and game, would be to find ways to have the TV show help gameplay. So I know you guys have mentioned like cheat codes that could be something somehow integrated in the TV show, or things that happen in an episode could very much relate to decisions you have to make in the game. And then I guess on the other side, in order to encourage people to play the game and be interested in the TV show, you could have winning the game of the week or otherwise engaging in it expose you to either episode content, so like things related to the episode, little clips or something like that, or also to introduce the thing of next week. So in some way, in solving it, you either create a new problem that becomes the topic of the next week's show, or otherwise kind of gets you wanting more so that you can really navigate between these media. Are there other major ideas we have that?
I'd like to make a point if I could. One of the things that I'm a strong believer in is that the kids are becoming more and more good at deconstructing systems, and that the mini games have a tendency to err toward simplistic systems. And so while I actually really like the idea of mini games as a way of understanding, you know, subsets of the problem, I'd like to see all of them feed into a much larger system. The example I was using was some sort of biosphere model, where it's not a whole planet, but some collection of interacting systems that are sufficiently complex that it's not obvious, as you guys were talking about, if you turn this knob, all of the consequences that can happen from adjusting something. Yet there is this whole system that you're living in it, so you have to keep it, you have to keep your air reasonably clean and your water reasonably clean and keep growing food. But, you know, from week to week, you might have various crises to deal with and have to deal with the waste control system or the growing things or whatever it might be. And so I just wanted to, stick in the list of things to think about the point that there should be some system that is large enough that it feels like it actually can transfer into a real world as a collection of problems, and not be just a simplistic answer.
I have one thing I'll add real quick.
One thing I'd like to add, and that's the word fun. Thank you.
Here.
So any feedback, or should we go to you?
I think we're running out of time, so let's just go to you.
I'm going to drone on in monotone. Just to make it really exciting. Okay, so we were also concerned with sustainability and green, but specifically business models and money. So we want to know, kind of, making a TV show and a game that goes with it costs a lot of money. How are we going to, make something that will be able to continue after it initially gets out the gate? And so the short of it is that we initially talked about, well, where can this money come from at the beginning? We can go government funding, maybe the NSF has something, the Department of Education, DOE. You can go private donations, obviously PBS, WGHB knows something about that. You can go kind of more commercial and maybe talk to Sony or Microsoft. They might want to do some sort of partnership since it's a video game and they're trying to market their brand as really family friendly. So that might, there might want to be some collaboration there as well. They might want to underwrite your game. Beyond that, we also talked a little bit about what kind of advertising tie-ins can we do. Maybe there's some sort of product that really makes sense for this game. So you have Scott Lawn Care, or you have Home Depot's plant division, and they want to help fund part of this because at the end they get to slap their image up there and say that, we helped to fund this, so you should buy our products. And then we kind of came to the conclusion, well, philanthropy's good, but it's not really sustaining in the long term. It might get you started, but it's, unless you're a really, really big hit, you can't rely on that alone. And so one of the more interesting ideas that we actually ended up talking about for a while is that it costs a lot of money to make a TV show, right? It costs X million. And it also costs a lot of money to make a video game. Traditionally speaking, TV shows are more costly than games even. But maybe there's some way that you can combine the two. And so one of the more interesting thoughts was, instead of making, a TV show, and making a game, and trying to split up your funds on that, you take your money and you make this really expensive, awesome game. And then your TV show is largely showing that video game. They kind of do this in Japan and Korea to some degree. And so you actually have the video game there. You have actors that interact with it to some degree. But on any given TV show, a large portion of what you're seeing is actual in-game footage. And then that really encourages kids to go out and play the game because they want to see all the, they get to see maybe 15 minutes of it on the TV, but there's actually 2 hours of associated gameplay and they want to go and do all of that. And it makes the TV show side really cheap, right? I mean, you're really just taking the video out from the computer and plugging it into your TV camera and then, going on lunch break. So that was kind of the idea that we had for saving some money. And in the interest of time and everyone wanting to get out of here, I'm going to leave it at that.
Should we do
We should just say, so the presenters of the game would be, certainly if you go to the Japanese Korean example, you're talking about 20-year-old kids, guy and a girl, everyone's favorite big brother, big sister from the point of view of the game players, running around in the studio with an audience of game of the kids who are actually playing the game. Maybe they're invited on a weekly basis, but whatever prize basis. But the presenters are wearing the sponsored items that our sponsors want. So they are drinking whatever that Coca-Cola brand in water is. They are wearing non-prison issue outdoor apparel. They are wearing Timberland boots. They are maybe they're going around with going into the game via the AOL portal or something. So it's a way of sucking the kids into the game because they're seeing their heroes on the TV that are then actually avatars in the game. And the idea was also you build the presenters in as avatars within the game when the kids are playing it away from the TV series and away from the school. So their heroes are there. So it sucks them in that way because we talked about this. You can't afford superstars. You can't afford to use characters you've already got because they're being merchandised by private firms. So the only way you can do it is by creating some instant heroes for the kids to look at, to create the fun thing, to actually get them playing the damn thing. And we had actually a little bit of discussion about just how much we wanted to become prostitutes in terms of where do you go to the sponsorship. We also talked a little bit about international co-production with that standard WGPH stuff that you know better than we do. So.
Awesome.
Thank
well,
you.
Thank you so much, and I just want to give you all a round of applause. Thank you for all your great ideas. So, Blythe, what happens now?
What happens now is that the team,
Jason
and their members, the executive producers, our executive producer of Interactive, we go back, we have our head writer who's working hard to figure out, to flesh out the creative story. And then when we have a creative line that we're really excited about, we'll develop our characters visually and flesh them out. We will figure out the look of our environment. And then when we have that, we'll then go forward on raising production money for the television show, however big the television show is, and the game. And we'll be, I think, developing and producing them in parallel.
All right.
But for all of you, just stay tuned. I have to say thank you so much. This has been a very rich hour for us. Great ideas, neat thoughts. You have it was a great opportunity for us to explore a lot of different things that we can't think on all by ourselves. So you've enriched it a lot for us. Thank you.
Thank you all. So it's my job as the Berkman person and Zenya as well to push you to the next session because
yep.
they're about to start.
Yep.
But thank you all again.